me pones un ejemplo. Entonces, si tú no quieres hablar conmigo, dímelo para yo no llamarte ni molestarte, porque nada más quedaba tú.
Real talk, real people, real stories. The He's Just podcast. Yeah! Welcome, everyone, to another He's Just podcast. I'm your host and founder of the He's Just a Social Worker movement with another amazing show for you today. But before we get started, I want to remind everyone that this platform was built because way too often as people, we were overlooked or labeled, but this is no longer. Our plight and our fight is for anyone and everyone who feels a need to be understood. We are strong as individuals, but unstoppable when we unite. Today's show is about student debt. Did you know that student debt can have a significant emotional impact on students, parents, and families alike? For the students, it can lead to feelings of stress, anxiety, and even depression as they face the pressures of repaying loans while trying to build their careers. According to the latest Gallup Lumina Foundation, the Cost of College report, nearly 3 out of 4 Americans who took out student loans say their debt has forced them into a delay of a major life event like buying a house, having kids, or even getting married. Dr. Courtney Brown is the Vice President of Impact and Planning at Lumina Foundation in Indianapolis, where she spearheads strategic planning, learning, and international engagement efforts. Dr. Brown has a robust background in performance measurement and research. She's a sought-after speaker on post-secondary strategy and student success. She will share her insights, and she does this all over the world, across the United States and internationally. Dr. Brown also contributes her expertise to various advisory boards, including the University of Virginia School of Education and Human Development Board of Directors. She holds degrees from James Madison University and the University of Virginia. Dr. Brown is committed to helping everyone understand the true cost of college and the degree. And she will help us with this underlining concern that we may have as students and or parents around the impact of planning and going to college. Dr. Brown, welcome to our show.
Thank you. And thank you for that impressive introduction.
Well, the first thing I want to know, there's so much that I have to ask, but tell us a little bit about yourself, about your journey and your walk into this work.
Yeah, thank you so much. So I work, as you said, at Lumina Foundation, and we focus all of our efforts on increasing more opportunity for more Americans to access and succeed in some form of education beyond high school. We focus primarily on those people who have been left behind, Black, African-American, Hispanic, Latino, and Native American individuals who haven't had the opportunity to access and succeed. And we really work toward increasing the attainment level in the United States, meaning those people that have a degree or a credential beyond high school, to 60% by 2025. So that's kind of the mission of what we're doing. And then all of this falls under it, because in order to get there, we have to figure out what's holding people back, what barriers are they facing? And so we've done a lot of research to understand some of those things and figure out ways to provide support.
I had a question just to start out. Tell us, what are some good steps for parents or students who are approaching college? There's a lot to think about. What are some steps that you think that we should be thinking about?
Wow, you're right. It is really important to think about it and go into it with eyes wide open. So I think one of the first things that I want to address is that college is worth it. I know that we often hear it's not valuable. I'm not going to recoup my cost. But we know that more education after high school is related to higher incomes, better health, better well-being, more likelihood to enjoy your job and find purpose in your work. You're more likely to volunteer and participate in your community. So it is absolutely worth it. And we know that most Americans say any type of post-secondary credential. So that's a certificate, a certification, an associate's degree, a bachelor's degree, whatever it is valuable, and they want their children to get one. So I think that's important. Now, the problem going back to, you know, what you say to parents, it's not accessible to so many people.
Mm.
So some things that parents need to know when thinking about getting to your question. In order for to think about this, I think one of the first things you have to think about is, you know, everybody doesn't have to go straight into college. So mm-hmm. if you're not interested or not ready for it, don't go doing something and spending money on something that you're not committed to. Second of all, if you are committed to it, look for a program that actually provides something that is going to have a good job on the other side. And understand what that cost, the full cost is going, the real cost is going to be. So those are three first steps.
Mm. You know, I really was looking at your answer in so many ways, and I like the end result about thinking about the good job, like the end result. Because I think a lot of us, when we're walking into this, it's probably more about the document that we're going to receive or the type of degree that we're going to like talk about when we do attain it. Let's talk a little bit more around planning. What are some of the challenges that you hear families share with you when they're discussing, I'm really stuck here, even to start?
There's so many challenges. I mean, first of all, when you think about a first generation student, so that's a student whose parents did not attend college. They don't have a mentor to look up to. Their parents want them to get that degree. They're rooting for them and doing everything they can, but they haven't had that lived experience to understand what it is. And so they don't have all the answers. The second problem that we face are, you know, our counselors, our high school counselors are overworked. There's, you know, one counselor to hundreds of students in many high schools. So they just don't have the capacity to be able to help students kind of figure out what's going on. And one of the third problems, and in this survey that you referenced, the Gallup survey gets at this, people see a price tag. And they think, well, there's no way I could afford that. You know, in the news, I just read last week that there are a couple of colleges that are up to $100,000 a year. And so my fear is parents hear that and they see that and they go, $100,000 a year like that? That there's no way in the world we continue to college when, you know, the reality is that there are many colleges out there, community colleges, regional colleges, where it's, you know, it's still expensive, but it's $6,000, not $100,000 a year.
So we definitely want to unpack that a bit more, but let's talk a little bit about the research and your company. The Lumina Foundation, you know, cites that nearly half of the people underestimate the cost of a bachelor's degree by $5,000 or more, and about 31,000 overestimate these costs mm-hmm. by the same margin. Can you help us understand that?
Yeah, so what they did was when they surveyed people, they reached out and they said, okay, the average person or the price tag in your state for college to go to a state college, not a private college, a state college is whatever that price is in the state. So let's say in New York, I mean, I'm making this number up, but in New York, the price tag for a 4-year degree at a public school, public university in New York is $25,000 a year, let's just say. Mm-hmm. And then they said, how much do you think somebody really pays? What do you think of the actual, not the price tag, but the real price is? And so, you know, some people thought it was much less, said, okay, I guess you pay $15,000 a year. And then there were other people that said, oh no, I think you pay $25,000. When reality is it's, you know, somewhere between that. Very few people are paying that sticker price, but, you know, there is some price to it. So people were either underestimating and thinking it costs less than that price tag or way overestimating what it's going to cost. And then when we told people, no, like you're overestimating, it's really just, it's this amount. They said, oh, if I knew that, I would be so much more likely to go and get my degree.
You know, let me tell you from personal experience as an adult who then seeked various, you know, let's say titles and degrees as I move forward, even though that I had a system, I had a better paying job, I wasn't a new student, I still was faced with this daunting question, just as you talked about. I'm still stuck in between, am I gonna pay less or more? And the numbers don't really register, right? Because as you're there, you begin to say, well, I wanna change my major, I spoke to my counselor. So there's a lot to unpack when we're talking about these decisions. And I believe that not having parents who really have the understanding of it, and as you mentioned earlier, you really are pushing for your child. They're first generation students. You really want this to go through. And I can tell you from a Latino standpoint, we are very big on having our, you know, children begin to develop in areas that we did not. We enter this country to work really hard and we want to produce. And I think that that level of connection with our own values begin to change. And this is where I think we get tripped up a bit about the cost. We no longer worry about it. We're also just concerned with the end result. So, you know, thank you for really sharing light on that. I think it gives us an opportunity to really back in and think about this in a reverse way. Let's go back to this planning piece. How soon should families begin to prepare for college? And what are their thought processes, or what should they be?
Yeah, I mean, in an ideal world, and I'm talking an ideal world, saying that from a point of privilege, I understand that if you can put any money away as early as possible, that money will just grow. And so you can begin to save some money toward that. And so that's, you know, that's starting early, but that's hard. That's hard for most Americans to be able to do when most are struggling to make ends meet, and getting food on the table is the most important thing. The second thing is, you know, to begin to understand what their child is interested in, or, you know, begin to explore things in high school, take different classes to see what, you know, what might be of interest, because what we don't want to see is, you know, you just spoke to this, changing majors all the time. Every time you change majors, you transfer school, it's costing you. It's costing you more time, which means you're not in the workforce, and it's costing you more money because it's taking longer to complete. So the more somebody can go into the process having some sense of what they want to do, and what place will offer them the training to get that job, the better. So that I would really encourage in high school. And then, you know, ask questions. It's fine to ask questions. Every parent and child has the right to ask colleges and university questions, their high school counselors, their high schools, their teachers questions. Because the more, you know, it's going to take a village. It takes all of us helping and informing each other of this process, because it's confusing. It doesn't make sense. And it's not the same from one person to the next.
You know, what's really tricky about this is that there's a marketing aspect to how a student begins to kind of foresee, whether it is TV, YouTube, or any sort of platform. Maybe it's something that's happened within the family. So my brother's a lawyer, so I need to attend this school. So there's a lot that we have to like worry about when we're trying to put our personal interests behind this. What is an effective way that we can begin to say, hey, look, if your end goal is to attain a PhD, these are steps that would make sense. There's no real shortcuts, but what is that process, if you will, just a little, if you can tease that out for us?
Yeah, there's a lot in that question. I mean, I think the end goal shouldn't be the PhD. The end goal is, what are you going to do? What is it you want to do? And do you even need a PhD to get there? So understanding that, and then, you know, looking at, you know, oftentimes you can look and see what different majors, what jobs they may lead to. Or many schools may offer information and say, hey, here from our alumni that majored in philosophy, here's the types of jobs they were able to get. Or here are the types of additional degrees, graduate degrees maybe they got. And so looking for that information, asking that information, because, you know, these degrees should lead to some job and understanding what that is. So some of it's backtracking. What is it you want to do? And what credential do you need to get there? It may be, you know, a 2-year credential, maybe an associate's degree will get you there, and you don't need a bachelor's degree to get there. Or maybe you need to go on that journey and have a PhD to have that. So a lot of that is backtracking, and then talking to people about how they got there. What do they recommend? What schools do they recommend? I mean, there's so many schools to choose from right now, and you want to really make sure that you're going to a school that meets your needs and that people get jobs on the other side. and can make a, you know, a livable wage, a good wage.
You know, the pandemic in so many ways impacted us. And I know that you've heard this in so many reference conversations, maybe conversations that were, you know, brought up. Many of us lost 2 years of our social development. We lost 2 years of understanding what our purpose is, if you will. I come from an elementary school background. Now I'm at a middle school, but before I was at an elementary school, and we pushed hard for college and career readiness. And the reason for that is because we began to talk about the importance that it has for A, kids to come to school with regularity, the reasons why, not so much about getting caught up in standardized testing, although that already begins to happen with SBAC and NWEA and other type of assessments that we have to hold. But it begins to tell parents the seriousness behind this, and attendance being one of them. For students of the minorities who do struggle with this, with these gaps, attendance and probably grades that weren't the best, what are they facing when they're up here now that they're listening to these thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars? What should they be thinking about?
Wow. I mean, first of all, you're right. I mean, people lost some valuable time and valuable social time. What should they be thinking about? I think they need to figure out what situation, what environment do they need to be successful in? What's going to work for them? You know, back in the day, we were all thinking about, you know, what we need to do is offer more online options so people have more flexibility. And yet we realized that being in isolation is not good for people. Mm. And having all those online options are not great. And so in thinking about what kind of environment will you thrive in? What kind of supports do you need? Maybe you need all online. Maybe you're a parent yourself. Maybe you have other responsibilities and have to take care of your parents or your family. And so having an online will help you thrive and think through that. What other kind of supports might you need? Do you need a culture of belonging? Do people look like you at the institution so you feel like you're at home there? So I think there are things that you really need to unpack. It's not just going to class and learning. That's a huge part of it. But what are all the other things that are going to help you thrive and survive and, you know, get through and thrive, be better on the other end?
Hmm. That was so nicely put, because even going back to use the pandemic to get jobs as we move out or move towards that goal, you know, that there are so many things that we should concern ourselves about being loved or liked at the work that we do, but I think we need to enjoy it. And I think that that's what I'm hearing for you. The success piece is one, but what does success really mean to you? Is success money, or is it success, I really enjoy what I am doing? And this is why I took this line of work. This is why I took this course, to kind of support those dreams, because many of us are stuck in between. Is it money the outlier, or is success painted as I'm making myself or making my family members proud? Talk to us about this work for you. Why is this so important to you, Dr. Brown?
This work is so important because I believe in the power of higher education unlocking opportunities for millions of Americans that don't have opportunities. You know, I've seen, you can look at the data and see who has the opportunity and who hasn't, and therefore who has been able to, you know, get good wages, enjoy their jobs, accumulate wealth. And right now there's a system of haves and have nots in this US, in the United States, that is not sustainable. And so focusing on how do we increase the opportunities for those people who haven't had them before? And by increasing opportunities, we have to find a way to make it more accessible. We have to find a way to make it more that people understand the process and that it's affordable, so people don't have to take on debt. So that's, you know, that's what gets me going every day. That's why I think this is so important, because we have to name it. We have to see what's happening and understand it so that we can address it and not put a Band-Aid on it, but address the root cause so it doesn't continue to happen over and over again.
So one of the things I'm thinking about is, how does a family, maybe now that they're listening to our show, let me first start there saying, I did put up your link on my own website. It's like a picture of you under resources. And when they click there, they go straight to your site. Nicely put, Dr. Brown. I really enjoyed, you gave us some blogs, you gave us some articles, you gave us some real life experiences that I think that are going to be pertinent, not only to the person who searches on your site, but to the people who are just just browse and may have questions, maybe as a do later. But the type of information that you're sharing with us today, not only is it critical, but it's going to be useful in so many areas. And I'm very happy that we have gotten, you know, linked up for this, because I believe that many families who are listening to our show are going to understand there's no right or wrong way to do this. It's just having a process of having the opportunity to learn and gain experience. And as you gain experience, go with what you feel would make the most sense for thyself. I really did like your site. Let's just talk a little bit about it. LuminaFoundation.org/person/Courtney-Brown. Very nicely put. There are articles here. You talk about your work. You talk about news and resources. What can a family expect when they reach out to you as far as what you have prepared to support them on this journey?
Yeah. So at our foundation, we don't provide scholarships or individual. We're trying to change the system. We're trying to change the policies and the practices so that everyone can benefit from them. But what they can find is a lot of information about the reality of what's going on and good examples of colleges and certificate and certification programs that are making incredible progress serving more people better. The other thing they can find is just other information about accessing and succeeding in post-secondary education. One of the things that I want to make sure I don't miss saying is talking just for a minute about the FAFSA. I'm sure you're familiar with the FAFSA. It's a free application for student aid. And it's really important. And it's something that every family, when we talk about things that you need to prepare, filling out the FAFSA is really how you apply for free money, grants and work study funds and even loans to help you be able to pay for college or a certificate program. And it's the real version, the real purpose is to help more low-income people access it. Now, one of the reasons I speak about it is because a new version came out this fall, and it was slow to roll out, and it's been really slow to notify people, and it's been a headache and concerns about it just for this year and how it's going to impact people. But that should not stop people from completing it. Please complete, no matter who you are, no matter how much money you make, I encourage everyone to fill out the FAFSA, because you never know. And you could get a Pell Grant, which will provide you thousands of dollars a year to attend a college or university. So it is one piece that is really important for all parents to know.
Useful information. Thank you so much for that, Dr. Brown. Let's talk more about the disparities in higher learning and how you mentioned policies. How do these policies impact the minority populations that we referenced earlier? And what can be done to support these families who are struggling financially to find these opportunities?
Yeah, I mean, so there are a lot of policies that have been put in place that, for example, for colleges, a lot of colleges have given out merit scholarships. So those students who have the most AP, that's advanced placement credits, or the most, you know, community service opportunities and whatnot, which is really easy to do if you're privileged and you're, you know, living in a really fancy high school that offers all of these things. The majority of Americans don't have access to lots of AP classes, and, you know, they don't have time to do community service because they have to work to help their help support their families. And so, you know, policies that can change could be need-based scholarships rather than merit-based. Understanding where students are coming from and supporting them that way and giving them a leg up or an opportunity to access the institution so that they can perform up to their, you know, abilities. So there are things like that. There are policies around childcare. More institutions should offer childcare. You know, about 40% of today's college students have children of their own. And it's really hard to go to college when you have to, you know, also pay for childcare. And so what policies can we change to offer childcare, food banks and other things at colleges and universities so that some of those basic needs are taken care of?
I love the way you broke down the real life situations, because these are real situations. These aren't things that the now new typical student will not walk up to a college door and not have. Most of them already are starting a family or maybe already have a family. They had a couple of years off. Maybe there was someone sick in the home. They had to go back. Their first experience in college wasn't the, you know, greatest. Let's talk about this debate. There's so much that people think about. And I know that you talked about what makes you successful. There's no real blueprint. But a lot of students I know, the first generation ones, are thinking community college versus earning my bachelor's. Could you help us break that down?
Yeah. I mean, again, it goes to what is it you want to do? And, you know, a two-year, an associate's degree at a community college may be the credential you need. It may be a bachelor's degree, but there's no harm in starting at a community college and then transferring to the four-year. So, you know, often community colleges are much less expensive and, you know, you can go get your associate's degree and then transfer to a four-year, because most state systems have policies that allow, you know, they accept all the credits from a community college to transfer to get that bachelor's degree. So if that works best for your family's financial situation, then start at that community college, get that associate's degree, and then transfer to a bachelor's degree. But, you know, my recommendation is make sure you get an associate's degree in something that if you have to stop after that 2 years, for whatever reason, you have to work, family issues, that you have a degree in something that is marketable, that will get you a job on the other side. So get, you know, get a good associate's degree, and then it's fine to go to get your bachelor's. Or if you're able, start that bachelor's degree. If you can get a Pell Grant by filling out the FAFSA, if you can get other need-based aid or even merit aid, so to reduce the cost of that bachelor's degree, then go get that. The bachelor's degree is, you know, pays off long, you know, in the long term, but many of those degrees. So you can't really go wrong. But do what works best for you. Just because your neighbor, your aunt, your second cousin has gone one path does not mean it's the right path for you.
Hmm. Great stuff. You know, one of the things, again, referencing my personal experience as a Latino student coming out from high school, may have gotten their GED or finished high school, but don't have English speaking parents. And they're going back to debate about the importance of going back to school or not. And we've kind of touched base on that. But I think that where I'm leaning now is the families who don't understand the process and that really want to get involved, because parents are going to the tours, they're going to these different spots. They are vested. What are some of the recommendations that we're thinking about for people who English is not their first language and they need to access this? What are we thinking about?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And, you know, you're right. These parents care and they want the best for their children. They want to support them in any way they can. And often the process is not transparent to them. They can't understand what's going on and nobody's speaking to them so that they can. So my recommendation is to, you know, not to put this all on the student that they have to translate everything, but ask for things. And, you know, oftentimes many institutions have things in Spanish and not in all the other languages, but ask if they have any of the materials in another language. Ask if there are any communities of Spanish speaking, of Russian speaking, of French speaking, of whatever it may be, language that people can access so that they can see it, or communities of other parents that they can talk to and get information from them. I often recommend that, you know, at their churches or their community centers, people gather in there in groups. Are there people that they can talk to that have children, grandchildren, parents who went through the experience that they can learn from?
Excellent. I think that you hit it on the nail. These parent support groups need to happen often. And what about if they were to happen in places that we commonly go, whether it is the supermarket, whether it is the churches, where this information becomes available? It's not about selling them something, it's about telling them something that they actually need to understand, because as we talked about, this is going to cost them thousands of dollars, and it may impact their abilities to get married, to buy a house, to do different things. So I do believe that it's important that the places that we congregate begin to change their landscape a bit and offer opportunities, because these same students may be the ones who will be running their small businesses, who will be within their communities to kind of touch base and learn more. So learning that plan. One of the things I love to do, even for my elementary school students, when I was working with them, was teaching them about finance. I would bring an expert or someone who knew about bank accounts, and I had my third graders and fourth graders learn about writing a check and using the same type of levels, the manipulatives or whatever they needed to do the math, but to give them that experience to understand, you write something to Dr. Brown, Dr. Brown offers this, I write something, et cetera, et cetera. I think that it's never too early to find ways to tap into the learning. And you talked about learning at a need base. And if we're thinking about that, I like to reference this as like project-based learning. A lot of us are better at sitting at a presentation, watching a great presenter speak. Some of us are better going home with the video, playing the audio, reading about it. So just to go back to that piece, I feel that we need to continue to do a better job about what works for us to retain and get the information, whether it's our language, whether it's using something that's going to give us that accessibility. You know, let's talk a little bit about your rule 10 and how can we activate this system to kind of support us? I really did like this when I saw it. Tell us a little bit about that as you prepare for college.
About financing college?
Yes.
Yeah.
Using the rule 10.
Yeah, it's really about who is responsible for paying for college and how do you save up some money so that you're saving it, institutions are chipping in, the state is chipping in, federal government. And so it really is just kind of thinking about how to better finance college and universities for more people.
If you weren't doing this line of work, Dr. Brown, what would you have been doing? Tell us.
You know, actually, it's interesting. So I spent many years teaching English as a second language. So I brought that up, and then studying languages. And that's that was always something of interest to me. So those are two of my passions, working with, people learning English and languages.
You know, communication is a big part of this journey, obviously. And, you know, finding ways to contact financial institutions. Is there a set way that we should go to this? Usually you start at the school or the school references. Some people come in with their own specialist to kind of help them plan out. Some parents are very proactive. What's a good way to learn about finances when we're thinking about that?
About financing college?
Correct.
Well, be really careful. So again, first thing, fill out the FAFSA. Read everything you can about that, because federal money, it can be free, or you know, they've work study programs, or they're federal loans that don't allow the accumulation of interest until you've completed that degree. And so they're safer. Be very careful about private loans that are often predatory, with really high interest rates. And that's where a lot of people get themselves in trouble and get into far debt, because they take on, you know, they're willing to try anything and get the money, whatever they can, to get themselves or their child through. And they end up accumulating a lot of debt and don't end up in a really good place. So do your homework, be really careful about those things. Also look into, you know, there are many state programs that also offer ways to pay for college. So in Indiana, we have something called the 21st Century Scholar, where in middle school, I believe that children can enroll and say, I want to be a 21st Century Scholar. And if they complete this program through high school, an Indiana college is paid for them because they've participated in this program. So there are many programs in every state that offer things like this. And so looking into those and trying down those avenues before you have to go to the last resort and taking on a private loan, which can often leave you much worse off than before.
Yeah, here up on the east side, we do have some programs, the tuition-free programs. You promise to work for your state after you get your degree. That kind of works out. Can you talk a little bit about some of the horror stories that you've heard related to whether it's private loans or families that really got caught out there in a bad situation? Can you share, if you could think of any stories?
Yeah, I mean, these are people that take on, I mean, it's still a lot of debt, but, you know, $10,000, but it quickly accumulates because the interest starts on day one. So let's say somebody takes out $10,000 every year to get a bachelor's degree, and it takes them 5 years, because most people it takes longer than 4 years, unfortunately. So 5 years, so that's $50,000 that they have borrowed, but every year from day one that begins, that interest is accumulating, and they can't pay anything back because they're not making any money. They're in school, they're, you know, trying to learn, or the money they're making is paying for their rent. So that can quickly double and then triple. And this is why people are, you know, they're unable to pay their loans and go into bankruptcy, which, you know, hurts them and trying to buy a car or a house. When we found in this Gallup survey that 71% of people who have taken out loans report, and I think you said this at the top of the hour, but people who have taken out loans aren't able to buy a house, buy a car, get married, or return to school if they started and they want to complete their degree, because they don't have the money to do it. So they're delaying all of those life events because of that debt.
Mm. You know, another thing that I'm thinking about now is timeline. It's very like systematic the way that we think. There's many of us who say, well, I just graduated, I'm starting my first semester in September. Some may say the first semester starts in December. I really want to make it there. So now we're rushed into making a decision. We're kind of forced without really thinking it through because we wanted to do the timeline thing. We wanted, look, I want to finish this. And then like in 2 years, I want to do that. That usually trips people up. Is there an organic system, if you will, because if you didn't enroll for that first semester, you know, family shouldn't really be concerned, enroll for the next one, really think it through. But is there some sort of system that you believe that can be effective as families are learning more before they make or take that big leap?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, you're exactly right. Like, we don't have to follow some system that was created decades ago for a very different population than we have now. So, you know, there is no pressure. You don't have to graduate from high school and at 18 know everything you're going to need to know and go immediately into college if you're unsure. Take that semester off. All community colleges and many regional colleges offer that rolling admission. So you can start at a different time. There are many other institutions like Western Governors University, which is an online institution where you really begin whenever you're ready. And you take courses, you know, it's really at your own timeline. Once you show that you know it, you have that competency, you move on to the next class. And so it's really on your own timeline. There are many more models like this coming up all over the place. So we don't have to, sit in a classroom. One of my colleagues used to say, if we're focusing on butts in seats in college, then we're focusing on the wrong part of the body, because it's about what you know and what you're able to do, not how long you're sitting in a chair in a college classroom.
Good stuff. You know, there's so much to think about for families, but for you, I'm going to call you guys the decision makers, because people are coming to you. You have done the scientific work, you have done the research, and you're still learning of this process. There's no real, everyone knows everything, but let's talk about the state policy and the call for action. What are you seeing that states are hesitant to do that you wish that they would be doing sooner or now?
I wish they would figure out how to make it more affordable for everyone. Prices are going up. It's becoming less and less accessible for far too many Americans. And that's a problem. It's a problem for our labor markets, for a problem for our communities. It's a problem for our nation if we can't develop the talent that we have. So that is what, and I know it's way more complicated than that, but we have to address affordability. States have to figure out how they can help to subsidize more of this. States are giving less and less money to our universities every year. And that burden is falling on people. And it's not going to work and it's not sustainable. So that, if I had to pick something, that would be it. Make it affordable.
Is there a way, even if you had like a magic wand, is there a way that you think this can happen? What is a good way to make it affordable? And now, like, I'm in my mind thinking about Medicare Part D and Obamacare and all these systems that were going to change the world. But let's not get all the way out there. But I'm just saying, what do you think is a great way if you had this magic wand, Dr. Broom?
Yeah, it's what are our priorities? Education should be a public good, and it's not being looked at as a public good. It's being looked at as an individual good, but it is a public good. It is better for our communities. It is better for our workforce. It is better for our nation, the more educated population we have. And so I think until policymakers see it as a public good and understand who today's college students are, then we're not going to get there. Because I think, you know, many policymakers think that college students, college kids, are who they were, you know, in the 60s or whenever they went to college, and think of it as, you know, mom and dad dropped me off in August. And for 4 years, I lived in this brick building. And then I left and I got a job for the rest of my life. Mom and dad aren't dropping most people off. They're not paying. Most people are financially independent from their parents who are college students. But policymakers don't see that. They see it from their very, you know, narrow picture of what they did. So until they understand who today's students are and understand that this is a public good, then it's really hard to get them to fund appropriately the colleges and universities.
Hmm. What do you think has worked so far, though? Is there anything that you can say, well, you know, 3 years ago, I didn't see this, and now I think we're headed in the right direction?
You know, one of the things are that states started to pay attention to increasing attainment in their states. So Lumina in 2008 set a goal for the nation that by 2025, 60% of Americans would have a post-secondary, a certificate or certification after high school or a degree after high school. And that was in 2008. And the nation stood at 38% then. And only one state had their own state goal. Between 2008 and today, 49 states set similar goals. So they focused their efforts on increasing attainment in their states. And every state in the country increased in attainment. And to do that, they had to focus on today's students. They had to focus on students of color. They had to focus on quality. They had to focus on new models and better supporting students. And so I would say every state has made strides in getting more people to get educated after high school. So I think that's good. We're not there yet. We only sit at 54% as a nation. And so we have a long ways to go still, but people are making changes and making movement.
Awesome. Let's dig deeper there a little bit about that. Let's talk about higher education attainment for that look, that stronger nation. We need about 60% attainment, and you kind of versed as to why. How can we get involved as community people to kind of support your work?
Yeah. You know, you were talking about community before, how important community is, and even the grocery stores and other things. We live in community. And so having community support the ideas, having community support the people that live in their community, understanding that as their community members grow in getting more knowledge and more credentials, that they'll support their communities. They will be the business owners in their communities. They will be able to provide more jobs in those communities. So providing, you know, at the community center, providing a workshop on FAFSA helps more people get that information. Having the community center provide information to people that speak another language, to parents, and saying, you know, this is what this is about. Not only does it provide a space in the community, but those are the people in your, you live in your community, you trust them. You believe they want best for you. And so it's a way to get the message out and get the information out to people within the community. So communities are critical, so important to be part of this.
You know what? It's time for me to play the magic wand kind of thing. What if government on our pay stubs, instead of taking out so much money for federal and state, began to take out for education? So as soon as the working families are producing money, that there is a tax or something that's removed to support education in that family, and that money is saved up or put in some lump so that the person who is thinking about going back to access some sort of learning, they can access it. And if they don't, it goes back into that Medicare pool that it originally began with. I think that there has to be a way that we get more supports from government, because all I keep hearing is about cuts. And maybe I'm being negative about it, but that's the only thing that I can think about. Whenever I'm thinking about college, I'm thinking about a team of people who recruit you. They do a great job of doing that. Once you're there and you successfully finish, if you're still alive, you finish, somehow, some way, you're still paying dues. You come back as alum, they're asking you to donate as if it's never enough. What more can we actually do? And I'm kind of thinking to myself, if government were to step in and say, hey, everyone's paycheck will now be whatever, X percent, and this goes into a big pool for college and kids can access it and so on and so forth. Because I know that a lot of families, when they're thinking about a benefit package and people are getting into new jobs, what is my benefit package? Do I have that 529? Do I have 401s? Do I have all of this? It's so many things to remember. And the cost of living isn't all that great now. So it's very difficult to kind of stay afloat, have these big plans and worry about that. So if I were to, you know, think about my magic wand, government should think about taking taxes out directed towards education and kind of support that movement. What do you do for self-care, Dr. Brown? In the middle of all of this, what do you do to take care of thyself?
Oh, great question. Part of it is talking to people like you. I think that's fun. It gives me energy that people care about it. I also exercise, because it's my one stress relief to just kind of take my mind off of things. How about you?
Well, there are some things I do, and I usually talk about me being a self-proclaimed Iron Chef. So I like to cook to kind of let my stuff out. I like to show off at work, trying to bring my home lunch and say, look what I cooked. I just let the microwave do the talking. Austin, what'd you cook today? So these are the things that I really enjoy that can take my mind off of things. I like to also exercise and take walks. But for me, it's about the students. It's about the families and the people. I'm constantly thinking of ways to develop better ways of them to not run into some of the situations that they run into. I had to start late. I had a GED. I didn't think school was for me, and school turned out to be the best thing for me. I'm actually now working at a school still, but a lot of the things that I did not know was that there was opportunity. So everything that I have that I try to do now is always, you know, prefaced with students can benefit from this. And as I, you know, continue to make this movement and get this He's Just Foundation and get this He's Just non-for-profit going, is always about thinking about the children and what they can benefit for. Because just like you, I am very concerned of what their future is. And many of the students look like me, don't really have the opportunities and enter this country, you know, with trauma, layered with different things. And once they come here, it's go to work, figure out what you need to do, take your lost links, even though you just dealt with trauma, you know, you get placed, whether you get special education or not. So my self-care is always focusing on how I can make the students better. I usually try to think about that and worry less about myself. And I think that that keeps me focused. What are things that you're currently working on and that you want people to know?
Yeah. I mean, one of the other things we're working on now is understanding the value of higher education to make sure, you know, we know a lot of Americans are saying, is it a valuable investment? So if I spend $10,000 a year, am I going to get that on the other end? And so trying to make sure that it's not just getting, you know, as you said before, that piece of paper at the end, but that piece of paper is valuable. It's going to lead to a good job. And, you know, if we had a successful system and that once people got a credential, I'd like to think that people would get wages, wealth, and well-being. They would have a significant wage over a high school degree alone. They would be able to accumulate wealth. So that's, you know, and considering their debt, that they're accumulating enough wealth that they can start to save up for a car, house, get married, all those things. And they have a high well-being. They're in a job that they like. They feel like they have purpose. They're participating in their community. They can take time with their families. So I like to think about those things, wages, wealth, and well-being. And so a lot of the things we are focused on now is how do we make sure that that's what people are getting out of the system, a quality degree.
Interesting. And, you know, usually when we talk about community, one of the focuses that we have on this show is reminding ourselves on what motivates us. Some of us is a story. Some of us is a person or people who drive us to do this work. Do you have someone that you say to yourself every day, Dr. Brown, today I'm going to make this world a better place. I'm thinking about this person and this person or this group of people and they drive me. Do you have such a story? And please share.
Oh, great question. I have so many individual stories, you know, but I would just say in general, it is what drives me and motivates me every day are helping all of the millions of people that don't have access, that are left unsure of what this system is and are giving up on it because it's not transparent and it's confusing. And they have the talent. We have so many talented people, so much untapped talent in the United States because they just haven't been given the opportunity. And so how can we give them that opportunity? And how can I help in any small way contribute to a society where you can't predict who has a degree based on the color of their skin or who their parents were? That's what drives me every day.
Thank you so much for, you know, sharing that with us. And I know that you're going to continue to do great things. We are thrilled that you've joined us here today because we've had an opportunity to learn about there's no right and there's no wrong. We also learned about being cost effective and becoming better thinkers, because I think that we feel rushed. There is a time and a place and there's a moment. And some of us, it takes us no time at all. Some of us, it takes us a little bit of more time. And I think that you spoke to all of us in that way. And we're very lucky that you have brought this knowledge to us. Is there any tips that you can leave for our parents as they now hear you and they're listening to this show and say, thank you, Dr. Brown, but there is one thing that you wanted to add to that?
First of all, I want to say, parents, you're doing a really good job. I know you want the best for your child. Think about, you know, take the cost, you know, understand what it's going to cost. It is worth it on the other end. It is absolutely valuable, but be really careful. Fill out the FAFSA. Fill out the FAFSA. That's what I want to leave them with. Get help to fill up the FAFSA if it's not in the language that you understand. Get ask somebody in your community or high school, fill out the FAFSA. And then understand what the real cost is going to be and try to understand what that's going to be for the life of the degree, not just for the first semester, but what's that cost going to be? It's okay to ask questions a lot, annoy people, because you have the right as a consumer, you're the buyer. You have a right to ask all those questions.
It's okay to not be okay. Thank you for that, Dr. Brown. The floor is yours. The students are listening to you. What do you want to leave our students with before you leave our show? What do you want to tell these guys?
I want to tell your students that they have so much talent and abilities, and they can be successful. That go forward, get something after high school, get a certification that's going to lead to a job. Get a degree, go get your bachelor's degree. You can do it. It is not for special people. You're all college ready. But go into it with eyes wide open, and you can attain and have a good job and a good life.
Y'all guys heard it here. Dr. Brown has told us, go get it. Embrace for more opportunities to learn from new experiences outside of your own. Be receptive to new ideas, to new plans, to a new mindset. While others have old opinions, you will have new options. Get that inclusive mindset. Because on this platform, we won't be overlooked or labeled, because way too often they did that, but this is no longer. Our fight is for anyone and everyone who feels a need to be understood. We are strong as individuals, but unstoppable when we unite. Tune in, friends, to another He's Just a Social Worker show, coming to another town near you real soon. We out. Go Indy!
Please note that the views expressed here are my own and not a representation of my employers and clients. Thank you for listening. We're always here for you. Just message us and we'll get back to you within 24 hours. Thank you. More than just at He's Just a Social Worker. In memory of my mother, Matilde De La Rosa, this is dedicated to you, Mom. Miss you so much. En memoria de mi madre, Matilde de la Rosa, esto va dedicado a ti, mamá. Te extraño mucho.